Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Friday edition of The Drive. Bill, Dan, and Coach Don Dunn. No Drew today, so Dan is at the controls.
I made the comparison with Drew, and again, I think this will be the last day we're doing this, but thank you so much to everyone who filled in last week, including the MVPs of the week. Coach Don Dunn, who came in every single day, and Drew.
Don and Drew. Drew had to be here to run the board every day.
Drew was here every single day last week, and so I said we're giving Drew an easy week this week because it's like when a pitcher throws a no-hitter and you have to be real careful with that next outing, right? Because, you know, it's a lot of
Don, it's like you had a defensive lineman that was in for 70 snaps last week. So you got to give him a break this week.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have, but anyway.
Yeah, it depends on who you're playing.
Right.
That's it. That's absolutely it. So thanks again to everybody who filled in last week.
And a lot of different things. You know, a lot of different directions we could go in.
There are a lot of things to talk about today.
A big weekend of SEC basketball, including Auburn playing the reigning national champion. Auburn's got a little bit of momentum. What a huge win this would be for Stephen Pearl.
Oh, no question.
Another coach who's been to the Final Four, right? Like this stretch, like the first. I think this is the ninth, because they showed the graphic during the Ole Miss game. Of how many different coaches Stephen Pearl has faced in his career already this season, who have been to the Final Four at some point in their career. So I mean, because it was most of the non-conference guys, right? Including what, a Michigan's coach has been to the Final Four, Arizona's coach,
obviously Kelvin Sampson.
Sampson's been there. Yeah. Patino has been there, and now he's facing faced Chris Calipari. Right, who's now Chris Beard, and now he's got another one, right? A guy he knows really well,
the coach of the defending national champs, who won it last year.
Coach of the defending national champs. So, just, what a gauntlet to run, like to begin a college basketball career. But for Auburn, a couple of wins, and now you just think what a massive win at Florida would be if you can win at Florida. You can beat anybody anywhere in college basketball
this
season. A team that can win this game tomorrow is capable of anything. I mean, at Florida is that kind of challenge. Like now it could, and this is a game that could be a party, right? Like Florida could jump on them early and have a big lead for most of the game. Like they're going to do that to teams this year that aren't up for the challenge, especially in Gainesville. But maybe not. Like, you know, Stevens talked about, you know, the feeling of being on both sides of this. When you're in a situation where one team's a pretty significant favorite and that game's closer than it's supposed to be. And when you're the underdog in that situation, you can feel how uncomfortable everybody in the arena is and how tight your opponent can get. Coach, you've been in those situations. You've probably been on both sidelines in situations where it's like, this game is not what it was supposed to be in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Right?
Quite a few times.
Sure.
Yeah, just wonder, what's going on?
Oh,
did we get here?
When you're the favorite at home.
Yes.
And it's
a lot of pressure.
And I think that's what Florida, like, the longer tomorrow is close,
right,
the more Florida's going to feel that way.
Right. Right. And plus, they're great friends, you know, best of friends.
Oh, yeah, absolutely coaches. They are.
So there's a lot at stake at this, and you know, you never know. You never know. Go down and hit some threes and get some breaks and get them in foul trouble. They're big, so man, they're huge.
No, I think one of the reasons you probably need to hit threes, my guess would be, Bill, that like it's not going to be easy to score at the rim. against
Florida. Absolutely not. And Auburn has been so good at that recently. Mm-hmm. And Auburn is the second best team in the SEC in rebounding and in offensive rebounds. The problem is Florida is number one across the board in rebounding. They lead the nation in rebounding.
Wow.
And you know, when you go 6'9", 6'10", 6'11", across the front,
yeah,
and you bring in 7'1", or 7'2", off the bench, that helps.
One through four, Florida is probably, like, in the absolute top tier of front courts this year in college basketball. When you think about Kondo, mm-hmm, and Handlogton is back for a third season,
right,
he comes off the bench for them.
Chinyelu has just been fabulous. I mean, he had 21 rebounds the other night, including 11 offensive rebounds. And Hawk can do it all. I mean,
Hawk killed us, as I've said for like a year, and as Stephen Pearl mentioned at the press conference this week, like, that's a guy who played his absolute best basketball. Like, there was, I don't know if he had like a past with Jani Broome, but there was something about last season where it, like, he was a bull seeing red when he saw the Auburn jersey last year, and it was, yeah, it brought out the absolute best in him, and he's playing like an NBA player this, mm-hmm, year as well. And so they're, I mean, those four guys are as good a foursome in the front court as just about anybody's got in college basketball. I think Auburn feels pretty good about who's getting minutes in the front court right now.
Yeah.
Between the games Keyshawn Murphy has
with
played.
Keyshawn looking healthy now. Yeah. I mean, he's getting better and better, what we've seen out of Filip Jovic, here lately.
The more and more distance Murph gets from the injuries, mm-hmm, at the beginning of the season, you feel like the healthier he's going to look and the sharper he's going to be. And he's willing to hold his own against just about anybody in an SEC front court. You mentioned Jovic isn't afraid of contact.
No,
like, this
not
is
at all.
Be Jovic's kind of game. I think, you know, where you might need to carve out some minutes for him just because you want him, and for that matter, you want Sway to be as mm-hmm fresh as possible. Williams Adams, and I think you're gonna want Keyshawn Hall to get some of those minutes.
He's got to help, you know, defensively and on the glass. Something. I mean, he's been pretty solid at getting, you know, 7-8 rebounds a game, and he's gonna need to be able to do that again.
Yeah, and Florida's guards, like Flandin Lee, are, I mean, they're both capable of taking over games in their own right. But it feels like a lot of it's in service to, can you hold your own with the front court, or do you need help? And then when you help, those guys are going to be open. So it's just a matter of, like, how often can Auburn's forwards win their matchups? Like, it's going to be that's going to be a gigantic question tomorrow against a team that usually wins in the front court in their own right, like Florida. Like, that's mm-hmm a team that feels like they usually have the advantage in that situation. And if you can figure out how to stop them, then you've gotten further than a lot of their opponents when it comes to protecting the basket.
So that's obviously one of the things we can talk about. You've got the AFC and NFC title games coming up this weekend with,
yeah,
Jarrett Stidham getting the start for the Broncos.
This could be a life-changing couple of weeks for Jarrett Stidham.
Oh, no
right?
kidding.
I mean, this is a guy who has not attempted a pass in the NFL in 2 years.
Wow.
He has not attempted a regular season pass since Bo Nix joined the team. There was that deal when he started a couple of games over Russell Wilson, and it might have been like a contract thing, or it might have been like a Russell Wilson getting benched kind of thing with Sean Payton. That was before they drafted Bo Nix. But the last 2 years, Jarrett Stidham has served as Bo Nix's backup and has not appeared. I think he had like a kneel down or something. Hadn't thrown a pass
right
in over 2 years.
Did you see the stat? I mean, he is the second NFL quarterback ever to make his first start of the season in the conference championship game. And the first one was a guy who was the starter, was injured, and didn't play all season till the championship game. That was a guy by the name of Roger Staubach.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I mean, Jarrett Stidham is the only other player, only other NFL player to make his first start of a season in a contender championship game is Roger Staubach.
I mean, I know there have been some like famous backup quarterback sort of heroics in the NFL playoffs before. I mean, Nick Foles won a Super Bowl a couple years ago, stepping in for Wentz in Philadelphia. Philip Rivers had tore his ACL in a game, and the backup had to come in, and then he played a game on a torn ACL against the Patriots. By the way, Philip Rivers, did you see the news today?
Yeah, he's interviewing.
The Bills have interviewed Philip Rivers for their head coach.
How about that from NFL to a high school head coach, back to the NFL, and possibly on to an NFL head coaching job?
Unbelievable.
How about that?
The American dream.
I don't think it's
the
craziest.
See who else is being considered as an NFL head coach.
Who's what do you say?
That would be Mario Cristobal.
Oh, how about that?
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
I did not hear that. Wow. I'm
trying to remember who's there's so many jobs open. I don't remember
that's
which one it was, but I heard that on the ESPN update a little while ago.
I think he would do well. He doesn't seem like – I mean, talent acquisition is part of his skill set, but I don't think it's the only thing that sets Mario Cristobal apart from a lot of other guys. I could see it happening. And he's a guy who started at the line of scrimmage, right? Those guys seem to be commanding respect in locker rooms these days. The Rivers one really intrigues
me. That's interesting.
Because he might
do a great job.
I think I actually think Philip Rivers would be pretty sharp hire by an NFL team or even like I don't know a college team that needs an offensive coordinator. Like I don't know. Like that's a name that I imagine he's got a pretty bright future. As a coach, you were familiar with him at a very young age.
Oh, yeah, we recruited the heck out of him. And, he's a great, great person.
Dad's coach?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of background, family, coaches, great player, college. And look what he's done now.
Oh, yeah. And the Cristobal, by the way, Drew would have been all over it because it's Steelers.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, I guess Drew would be a little conflicted there with,
with
no the Steelers
kidding.
Taking his coach, but no, that that's
okay. His pro team taking his college team's coach,
right? but with all the with all the different moves out there in where were we before the coaching before we got to we got in the Bills
and basketball?
Stidham.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, Stidham.
So,
yeah.
Okay. So with Stidham,
This could be
a life changing couple of weeks because if you play well this weekend, you're in the Super Bowl, and if you play well, if Stidham were to play well in these next couple of games, it feels like you could make an argument that you're not just a backup quarterback.
I think you'd get a shot somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, on top of the fact that you'd be someone who won an AFC championship game.
You'd be one of the most unbelievable stories, Cinderella stories you've ever heard.
I mean, there is a pretty famous Cinderella story about a quarterback coming off the bench and winning a Super Bowl that year. Tom Brady did it for the Patriots in 2001. That was an AFC championship game where he gets injured and Bledsoe had to come back in and complete some passes. So, like, the starter that he had replaced had to, like, perform some heroics in his own right, but it is interesting that like for Stidham, he's facing a team that like of all the teams he could be playing in the AFC Championship game to come off the bench and be the hero, it's the team that not only a team that he played for when he got to the NFL, but it's also a team that like they were part of maybe the most famous story of an underdog backup quarterback stepping on the field and leading his team to glory, the New England Patriots.
Yeah, I mean it's way back a little before your time. I mean, when I'm talking about Roger Staubach, you remember I mean Craig Morton.
Yeah, oh yeah,
coming
yeah.
in for Staubach, and then Staubach was the Super Bowl MVP. Got hurt. Craig Morton then started all the games of the regular season before Staubach came in. So yeah, this would be the most unlikely. This really would be because Brady played a little bit. I mean, as you said, Jarrett really has not. Played. I mean, he's been.
Oh, yeah. No, Brady played in the. Like, Brady took over in week two or week three.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And
I mean,
won
this
a bunch
is,
of regular season.
This would
games.
Be the most unlikely, out of nowhere starter to win a title game, a conference title game that we've ever seen.
Oh no, it would be shocking because of, and it's not so much that like, oh, Jared has a track record of not being good enough necessarily.
No, he doesn't have a track record.
Right. I mean, it's that he had, now the Broncos are an excellent team, and they have
they're an excellent defensive team.
And I imagine that it's probably easier to get the news right after the game than to lose. Like, it's not as though Bo Nix is like, if you had Bo Nix and he gets hurt on the first or second play of the game, right, and then you're going, okay, well, now mm-hmm. Jared Stidham's got to go in cold. At least they have a week to prepare.
Yeah, he's been preparing to be the starter.
Yes, but it's still, you're right, it's been 2 years and you're facing
his last start came in that Music City Bowl.
And you're facing in
2018.
And you
put up had a great game. Had a great game that day.
And you're facing a New England team
that Purdue.
They made Houston look terrible.
Killed.
Like I mean New England made that's a really impressive job that Vrabel's doing in year one.
I like him. He's tough, hard nosed.
And Drake May is really good, right? Yeah. Like they've found their guy too at quarterback. So it's gonna be an uphill battle for Jared Stidham. But it is interesting how, like, with Bo Nix and Jared Stidham playing for the orange and blue team, like it is a little bit more Auburn flavored.
Yeah, no kidding.
This weekend than he usually is.
All right, so that, I mean, we'd love your thoughts on anything going on in the world of sports. Look, since we were on the air, since we went off the air last night, Auburn has signed 4 players.
Yep.
So we can talk about that. We got to have to talk about the college football playoff. It's staying at 12. But there are some changes, and we'll talk about why it's staying at 12 and what may or may not happen. And speaking of changes, the AHSAA has made some big-time changes. A lot to talk about here on the Friday Drive. We'll get to our first break. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390, as we just get underway here with the Friday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
This is Lee County Revenue Commissioner Olene Price. When we have
AU.com.
Welcome back into the Friday Drive. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. And let's get to the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And Anthony is up first. Hey, Anthony.
Hey, how's it going, Bill? How you doing?
Pretty good.
Happy New Year. I hope you enjoyed your cruise.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, thanks.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, I just want to say I think we're seeing a change of the guard, Bill. We got a lot of young quarterbacks in the NFL, even the one that got knocked out the playoff, Carolina, and even Baker Mayfield. The only one I can think of that's kind of be like a grandpa to them is Matthew Stafford, but the rest of these teams, man, got fairly young quarterbacks, and I personally think it goes back to recruiting when these kids come out of like highly rated Stafford was, Sam Donald, you know, these guys. So that was really done on a high school level, and I was listening to you guys talking about like Stenham starting on Sunday, and we had a situation like that, man. It was Coach Larry Gore at Oklahoma High last year, and I was a sophomore. And we went to Elliott City, and I was starting quarterback. Larry McConnell got hit and drug all the way to the sideline by a linebacker that signed with Georgia Tech from Elliott City. I can't call the guy's name. But anyway, our second-string quarterback, who was a hell of an athlete named Andy Mann, and we played Elliott City on their homecoming. And that's when they had the old stadium where you go across the home side to get. And that was real tough back then. And we ended up beating them, like 33-28. And, man, Coach Gore told all of us to keep our helmets on until we got on this bus. But I was just enjoying listening to y'all. And I was just wondering, that brought back memory when you're talking about this, you know, the backup quarterback. Anyway, I'll hang on and listen to y'all talk. Thank you very much.
Good stuff, Anthony. Appreciate it.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, there are a lot of changes going on.
Can I ask a coach in a situation where, I don't know, like, I mean, speaking in generalities here, like if you're Denver and you got to make the switch from Bo Nix to Jared Stidham in a week, Like, do you think that you got to simplify and go more run heavy and sort of and try to take the game out of Stidham's hands to as far an extent, or do you maybe maybe you counterpunch there and you let her rip? Because I know some coaches say, all right, well, it's going to be the backup. Like Auburn has run into some backup quarterbacks where it's like, no, they're going to let the backup quarterback throw. Bill, you're familiar with times when Auburn's run into outstanding performances by backup quarterbacks, and it's like, I think sometimes defenses can let up when the backup goes in, and teams can take advantage of that.
I think probably early they'll try to keep it pretty basic, let him get his feet wet. But a playoff game, you can't be too vanilla. You got to try to win it. So, you know, he's at least, like you said, they've had a whole week. It wasn't like it happened Thursday. That would have been devastating in practice or something like that. You know, and look, go back and look what he's done best when he has played. I know it's been a while. And they'll simplify some things, but they got to go win the game.
I would think that for Vrabel and for New England, not underestimating Stidham just because he's a backup quarterback.
Yeah, don't get cocky. Oh, yeah. Don't get overconfident.
Like because you see that sometimes. You see, okay, well, this team, this team's without, I'll tell you what you see in college basketball a lot. It's like, all right, well, this team's without their star player tonight. Yeah. And their opponent's not at their best. Because, they thought they had the night off because the star player's out. And you'll get a sucker punch that way. And I just think for New England, like, that would be, if they think they've got a free pass to the Super Bowl because Jarrett Stidham is in the game instead of Bo Nix, I think maybe because Denver's had a week and because Jarrett Stidham is a real NFL quarterback that won some impressive games at Auburn, and Sean Payton has dealt with these situations before in his time as an NFL coach. Like, I would watch out for Denver. And then that other game looks awesome. I don't know what's going to happen with the Rams and the Seahawks, right? Like, it just feels like it's going to be just a heavyweight title fight of an NFC Championship game.
Yeah, so, that's the second game, right? Yeah.
So yeah, some really really good stuff on Sunday.
Oh yeah, no question about it. Let's see. Might as well go ahead and catch you up. At least I haven't looked in the last 30 seconds. I don't think Auburn signed another player, but they're up to 38.
Wow.
Incoming transfers with four additions last night, overnight.
How up to date is the Bill Cameron depth chart right now?
I've got it pretty up to date.
Let's go. Maybe when we come back from break, you want to?
Yeah,
do
we
you
can do that. Let's talk about the players that got added yesterday.
Yeah, good call.
Auburn added two tight ends. First came Hunter Herring.
He's the ULM quarterback.
Former Louisiana, then ULM quarterback, played multiple positions, had touchdowns. He's had touchdown receptions, passes, and rushing touchdowns. He's a 6'5", 230-pound athlete that Auburn's going to play at tight end. He's never played tight end. He has been always listed as a quarterback throughout his days. He has 1 year of eligibility left. And then I guess it was this morning, actually, Auburn added another tight end. They now have six tight ends on their roster. And this is a former Florida Gator who transferred to Baylor. And I don't think he played at Baylor. He was injured. Arliss Boardingham is a 6'3", 250-pound player who has 1 year of eligibility. So Auburn's added a couple of guys with 1 year of eligibility there at tight end. They have a couple of very interesting, intriguing young guys who have, I think, 4 years of eligibility each who they brought in. But now they can bring those guys along slowly and have a couple of experienced players. Really interested to see that Auburn, when Auburn added another running back from Troy, Tay Meadows, who had a pretty darn good year for the Trojans this past year. And he's another player with 1 year of eligibility, and he's from just up the road in Roanoke. Played at Wadley, and had a really good year. 5'10", 200-ish, or so running back gives Auburn another experienced hand there at running back.
That's a crowded room.
It really is.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because you're also talking about guys with multiple years of eligibility as some of these guys sort of waiting their turn. But yeah, Tay Meadows was the leading rusher for Troy in 2025. You know, it's nearly 700 yards. I believe he played at Handley.
And was a big part of a couple of really successful seasons.
Yeah,
that's why they haven't handled. Yeah,
this is a guy who maybe could challenge in the kick return game as well, but also seems like he's between Jeremiah Cobb and Bryson Washington and Tay Meadows, and you bring in Davenport from South Florida, who had a pretty good season as well. And then there's the thought of Omar and Alvin.
Yeah.
I mean, so you've got a robust sort of situation there at running back, and maybe this is an offense that plays multiple running backs a lot, you know, next to Byron Brown. I mean, I think that you certainly would have different skill sets and different combinations,
right,
if you wanted to have more than one of these running backs on the field at the same time.
Yeah, and then the other addition was a linebacker in Michael Matthews Canty, and I believe he was from Hampton. I believe he's a transfer in from Hampton, and he's a player that fits into. What are you doing with those extra 20 scholarships that you have? You know, you've had 85 scholarships. Now it's 105. This is a player you can offer a scholarship to. I don't know that you have to, have to go into the NIL or anything. Mm-hmm. But this is a player you can bring in because your roster is limited to 105. You get somebody who has played, you know, college football to come in and be one of your 105 players to practice and have a chance to play.
Yeah. Sounds impressive. I mean, it's amazing what they've done.
Oh, yeah. 38 transfers and 94. I believe I've got 94 players now on scholarship. So they still have room, and we know they're looking for a receiver.
Probably some D-linemen.
They absolutely are looking for an interior and an edge-type guy on the defensive line. So don't be surprised if Auburn doesn't add some more. So wanted to update you there. Yes, we'll look at the depth chart. We'll talk about some craziness in the portal. Nate Oates has said that Charles Bediako is playing tomorrow. let's see. We'll talk about the Alabama High School Athletic Association and its decision today as well.
I mean, you've got several pretty important folks in the NCAA. You had the quote from Baker earlier this week, and now you've got the VP of basketball, Dan Gavitt, in the last hour or so, putting out a statement talking about how damaging a pro Bediako ruling would be for the NCAA's ability to enforce eligibility requirements at all.
Nate Oates had some comments a little earlier in the day too, making it sound like, well, the court declared him eligible. We can't not play an eligible player.
Well, and I'm sympathetic to the argument that, like, okay, well, the NCAA opened the door for this themselves with some of the rulings about players that probably should have been ruled ineligible earlier this year.
Well, but the NCAA has stuck with their three things: that you've got a 5-year window, you cannot have signed a contract with the NBA, and what was the third one? Charles Bediako has signed an NBA contract. The players that they had allowed in sort of fit under that precedent of international players because they hadn't signed NBA deals. We'll see what happens, but look, he's going to play. I don't think there's any question. He's going to play tomorrow night against Tennessee.
The really important quote from the Gavitt statement, Senior Vice President of Basketball for the NCAA, Dan Gavitt, the really important quote is, if these rules surrounding the NCAA pre- and post-draft cannot be enforced, it would create an unstable environment for student-athletes, schools building a roster for the following season, and the NBA. The NCAA membership has a set of rules in place regarding the pre- and post-NBA draft eligibility that have clearly been in place and supported by all parties until these recent court challenges, unquote. I think they recognize, like, how many different schools will probably feel empowered to test the boundaries of who's allowed to play and who isn't if Bediako is given full eligibility.
All right, we'll talk about that and more. Get to your phone calls as well. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Who have we got hanging on?
Jerry hanging on.
Jerry, hang on. Yep, you'll be up when we come back here on the Friday Drive.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Friday Drive, and let's get right to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and Jerry is up next. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to call and say that Jacquez Wilkes from Wadley,
yes,
he won the 1A Back of the Year this year.
Yeah, how about that? And he's being looked at. You know, he's listed as a linebacker, but I think that he'll get a long look there as an edge rusher as well. That tells you the kind of athlete he is.
Yeah, either one, either running back, either. I mean, he scored 38 touchdowns last year.
They list him at 6'4", right?
He's big.
Yeah, I just wonder if maybe. Look, I wouldn't rule out anything. Like, he was a successful athlete in, like, multi-sport. Like, mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is a guy who clearly is coordinated and can do it all. That's a tall running back. And it's a crowded room at running back that Auburn has. But, like.
And Auburn has a need with looking for folks that can try to get to the quarterback. I think that's his quickest way to playing time.
If he could impact as a pass rusher, that would be gigantic, not just for him, but for Auburn.
Yeah, and make him a lot of money in the future, too.
Oh, no kidding.
All right, guys. See y'all later.
Good to hear from you, Jerry.
Yeah, he was a top five player in the state,
right?
Overall, in the in one of the recruiting services had him rated very highly.
You want me to go through the depth chart? You want to talk a little bit about the Clemson, Ole Miss, Cal situation.
The Dabo story is really interesting because we've wondered for a while about, amid everything going on in the world of college athletics when it comes to player movement, like, I think one of the concerns folks have is, well, what about tampering? What about the possibility of teams just telling a player, hey, there's a better deal available somewhere else, which is pretty strictly forbidden in professional sports.
Well,
like there are rules and policies in place to keep that from happening.
Oh, it's definitely supposed to be a no-no. But, I mean, it was big news in this state when Ty Simpson let it be known how much he was offered by schools. He didn't go. He was not in the portal.
No.
He had not even indicated he was, you know, strongly considering going in the portal. And apparently he had multi-million-dollar offers from multiple schools.
And I asked you during the commercial break, and nobody could come up with an answer where it's like, has there been a situation where we've heard about a notable position coach or head coach around the sport recently being disciplined for tampering? Like, I can't think of an example of that. And it's like, so it would seem to be, if it's as widespread as people think it is, the fact that no one's getting caught for it would seem to suggest that there's probably a disconnect between the rules and their ability to enforce these rules when it comes to tampering. And I'm not the only one who suspects that, Bill, because
No. I mean, and now we've seen the next level, apparently, of tampering, because I mentioned the Simpson situation. That's a player who is at a school and is not in the portal. And then we have seen situations where players have committed to certain schools, but then end up signing somewhere else. Now that isn't that unbelievable, Don. I mean, you saw that happen just in high school.
Yeah, you know, recruiting. Right before signing day. But
yeah,
this is crazy.
But this situation,
never had one already in class.
Yeah, Dabo Swinney says that Pete Golding, not an agent, that Pete Golding texted Luke Farrelly, the linebacker who had transferred in from Cal. He'd entered the transfer portal, had announced that he was going to Clemson, signed with Clemson, and enrolled in classes, was taking classes. Dabo Swinney says, Pete Golding texted him during his 8 a.m. class, and the text said, I know you're signed. What's the buyout? And then yesterday, Ferrelli just announced that he was going to Ole Miss, not to Clemson. He's signed with Clemson. The transfer portal has closed. Here's a situation I feel, if a player signs, that ought to close the deal there on his time in the transfer portal. If the transfer portal is still open and he wants to go somewhere else, I think he would then have to try to get back in the transfer portal and have the school okay him getting into the transfer portal. But, you know, right now we have no rules. And that's what Dabo then went on and said, quote, it's total hypocrisy. Ole Miss has accused others of tampering while they're tampering themselves. We have a broken system, and if there are no consequences for tampering, then we have no rules and we have no governance. I agree 100%.
Oh yeah,
with Dabo on that.
Yeah, exactly.
And to me, the bigger, like, you, while you can blame, like, some of this probably is on a player for not honoring the agreement, but it's like the bigger issue would be Ole Miss continuing to recruit a guy who'd selected if that's indeed against the rules.
Yeah, well, it should be against the rules. Yeah. I mean, a player is signed and enrolled in school somewhere else and attending classes.
Yeah, and the portal's closed, right?
Yes.
Like, I mean, it's like you would think that. I mean, it's
huge pickup for the Rebs.
But Dabo sort of wondering, like, can this be enforced, and is there the appetite to enforce this? And
get this.
I would suspect that there's
more.
Yeah,
there's more. Dabo says that Ferrelli's agent told Clemson they'd turn over text messages for Clemson to use against Ole Miss if Clemson added a second year for $1 million to Ferrelli's already agreed upon contract. So it's like they came and said, hey, we got, you know, we've been contacted. We're going to go to Ole Miss unless you pay us an extra $1 million. Dabo said Clemson talked to Ole Miss GM Austin Thomas and made it clear that if Ole Miss didn't stop communicating with Ferrelli, Clemson was going to turn them in. Austin Thomas reportedly said he wanted no part of it, but, quote, Pete Golding just does what he does.
And I don't even know what you like.
So I don't have anything to do with it. My head coach does what he does.
And I don't even know, like, in this situation, would they rule the player ineligible for Ole Miss? Would they make the player go somewhere else? Would they make the player go back to Clemson? Like, I don't even know.
I would think ineligibility would be the most likely thing. I love what Dabo said. Dabo said, quote, to me, this situation is like having an affair on your honeymoon.
Yeah, like I would say that this feels like something that's not going to be like there's. Until this is another symptom of, until there's like a more structured system,
right?
You're gonna have stories like this. Like, you're gonna have, if people feel empowered to do this, they're not afraid of the consequences.
Yeah, that's like, obvious.
Then I don't know how you're going to be able to. And if it becomes industry standard, right? It's almost like steroids in baseball, right? Where it's like if it becomes a thing that everyone's just doing. It's going to be really, like, it's going to take something really significant to get that out of, like, to move on to a different era of the sport.
I mean, it feels like a couple of times a week we talk about, wow, it's
the Wild West. Yeah.
You think you've seen it all, and then something else comes along. Mm. So, here's the latest, if you will. And we talked a little bit about the Charles Bediako situation a little while ago. So, I mean.
And that one's huge. Like, the Bediako one really is. Like, the number of players who I think would. The number of teams and the number of players that would feel empowered to think you can make a change to your roster right now or immediately.
And I would guess, you know, it surely isn't going to be limited to players who were playing for your team. I mean, you just. You'd look and see. Who is out there that fits this criteria that we could get? Because because you've got players transferring in that I don't know how everyone is eligible everywhere they're transferring.
And I don't know with Bediako, like once you say like signing a two-way deal. Now Bediako did not appear in an NBA game,
right.
but I don't know where the line is. Is that the new line? It's like, okay, you could be under contract to an NBA team, but you couldn't have played in a game. Is it like, okay, well, you could play in a game, but it's a red shirt rule. You only play in
so many games.
Yeah, you're only allowed to play five games or so many minutes. Like, gosh. I don't know. Like, I honestly, like, and the challenges that will come if what has always been sort of that red line of you were under contract to a pro team. I mean, before the red line was, did you forfeit your eligibility in the draft?
Because you knowingly did that. I mean, you have the opportunity. You make yourself available for the draft, but then you had a certain, you know, there was a certain deadline where you either withdrew or you stayed in knowing that staying in would end your eligibility.
And Alabama feeling confident enough in this situation to put Bediako out there on the floor, right, would suggest to me they think that, I think in part because of the exceptions the NCAA made earlier in the season for some of those other players that would have been ruled ineligible in the past, namely the Baylor forward, right, mm-hmm. who was drafted. He was selected in the NBA draft and was given his eligibility back and is now a freshman for Baylor this year. It's like once they started making, and I believe the Bediako lawyers said this, like once you start making these sort of arbitrary unprecedented decisions, right. It's like how do you tell anybody that, you know what, like how do you say any of your rules can't be,
no, you're right, bent, you're right,
or
I mean
exceptions can't be made for anyone.
I've always felt that players should have the option like they do in baseball of if they're drafted and they're not happy with that, then be able to go back. But I don't know,
especially
about 2 years later. I mean, it should be immediately.
Especially,
you know,
in an era where players are getting paid. It's like the thought of, like, you know what, if you want to come back, like RJ Lewis was a fantastic guard for St. John's last year, Big East player of the year, went in the draft, went undrafted. Don't know what he's doing right now. Might be in the G League. He was named in the CBS Sports article where it's like, if Bediako was given immediate eligibility on Tuesday in that hearing, you know, if the ruling is that Bediako is eligible for the rest of the year,
then absolutely R.J. Lewis is.
R.J. Lewis, one would think, becomes immediately available for anyone who would want his services. And there are some teams that I imagine would love to get in the R.J. Lewis business right now and add that to their backcourt. And it doesn't just stop there, right? Like would it extend to anyone within their five-year window of college basketball?
I would think it would.
Could people in Auburn have wondered, could players like J.T. Thor and Sharif Cooper. Mm-hmm. make a challenge and say that they'd...
Oscar Tshiebwe.
I mean, Oscar I think, is I don't know. I think this would be year five. For the Big O, who knows what kind of
crazy
the Pandora's box, right?
If
they're opening up, we've wondered about the legality of a lot of these rules, right? It seems like when they go to court,
they win.
When someone takes the NCAA to court, and it's been this way since the video game lawsuit, right? When it came, like the idea that the video game could use your likeness without compensating you for it, or use a version of your likeness where they don't use your name, but it's everything about you except your name. Like, ever since then, it's been like the Globetrotters and the Generals.
Yep.
Right? And the lawyers for the teams, you know, the lawyers for the plaintiffs suing the NCAA, they spin the basketball on their finger, right? And they break out the bucket of confetti. Right, and that's all that happens. And so, I would think that Bediako. I mean, how do you bet against Bediako to win on Tuesday when the NCAA has to defend when the NCAA has to defend their rules in court?
What this just shows is that any NCAA rule can be challenged, and if you find the right judge, then it's all over. NCAA's recourse? What do they do? Do they try to take it to a higher court?
So they're on Tuesday. There's a hearing where they have to defend sort of the reasoning why Bediako should not be eligible, and it probably won't end there unless the NCAA folds right then and there and says, you know what, like we can't mount a defense of our rules. Bediako should be eligible for the rest of the year because it's his fifth year or whatever. In which case, the door would open up for a lot of other players to say, well, why not me?
Right.
And there's
and see, if that's the case, then there goes your 5-year window as well. Then you don't have to worry about waivers. Then it's just it would be that situation. Players can play as long as somebody's as long as somebody's willing to pay them.
I mean, that's
to have them on their team.
I think there's a non-zero chance that the NCAA mounts a half-hearted defense on Tuesday and then folds when they realize they're legally not, they don't have anything just sort of legally to stand on, in which case it's another, like, all right, well, this is what happens when you don't have a system, right? Like, when you don't have a real system in place that multiple people have bought into, then you could have something that's challenged in a court of law.
That's
and
crazy.
What happens when you lose?
Yeah,
what happens when your rules are challenged in a court of law and you lose? Can you enforce those rules anymore?
Yeah, I mean, what's crazy is that for 80 years or so, there was a system in place, and teams had to go by those rules. Wow. All right,
but that was when they incentivized leaving college athletics.
Right.
When you could, right? And I think now they've created a system that doesn't incentivize leaving.
No, it's more incentivized staying if you can.
And now and how do you
We're way behind. Got to get to our final break of hour number one. Stick with us here on the Friday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Jonathan here with University Ace Hardware. At University Ace, we make renting easy. Pick up a pressure washer, grab the right cleaner, and get expert advice all in one trip. Not sure what you need? Our team is here to help, guaranteeing that you leave with everything required to get the job done right. From chainsaws and dingoes to lifts, zero-turn mowers, and much more. Rent for 4 hours a day, a week, or even a month.
We are out of time for hour number one of the Drive. I'd love for you to join in as we discuss quite a few different things going on. We'll get to much more and love to hear from you. In hour number two, 334-321-1390, Bill, Don, and Dan here on the Friday Drive. Welcome in to hour number two of the Friday Drive. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. And we'd love for you to join us. We'll go ahead and get to the Drive hotline here because Jeremy's been hanging on for a while. In case you're just joining us, though, and you don't have that, don't have us in your phone memory, 334-321-1390. But let's get to it. And Jeremy gets us started this hour. Hey, Jeremy.
Yeah, hey, guys. All right, so the biggest problem that we've got with this Charles Bediako thing is there's not another fan base out there from Auburn to Lexington that wouldn't be singing the exact opposite tune if it were their school.
Oh, no, absolutely no. My opposition to Bediako has very little to do with it being for Alabama. To me, the question of the rule, because I said before, like, I'm in favor, in sort of a broad stroke sort of deal, Jeremy, I'm in favor of players like Bediako being able to have the option to return to college basketball in certain situations. If you don't like where you were drafted, if you went undrafted, if you...
Yeah, but I don't think it should be years later. No. I think it should be something that if you don't think things are working out, go ahead and be able to go back to school.
I would say it shouldn't be something that's decided in January. I would say that if they want to say in June, like, hey, a year from now or whatever, like the rule has changed and you've got this time to play and it's backwards, like, and it benefits Bediako among other guys, that's fine. It does feel like trying to find an angle mid-season, and if it's successful...
Oh, it's definitely trying to find an angle mid-season.
And if it's successful, I think the Alabama aspect's going to be relatively minor because it's going to be a big list of teams and players trying to find a similar angle or a similar argument that they have a player that belongs on the floor.
And I think in multiple sports. I mean, Jeremy, what I was thinking is, baseball gives you the opportunity to go through the draft and then go back to school. I wouldn't be opposed at all to basketball and football giving players that opportunity. If they think they're going to be drafted very high and they either aren't drafted or drafted much lower, let them go back to school. But I don't think you should allow it to go years in, and after a couple of years, I mean, you'd see guys now, baseball players that still would be in the five-year window that have been drafted, and hey, things weren't working out in the organization they're with. Let me go back to school. I just don't think that's right. That doesn't mean that I think that the ruling is going to go in the NCAA's favor, though, by any means.
Well, here's I agree with absolutely everything you said. Here's where I'm coming from with this. There's not a fan base out there. There doesn't appear to be an athletic department out there that wouldn't stop at anything just short of child sacrifice to get some sort of leg up or advantage over anybody, no matter what the rule is.
No, you're right.
We're going to bend and kick and bust and tear and rip and just – as long as it makes my team come out ahead on the scoreboard, to hell with all of them.
Yeah, that's right. And that sort of goes to the story we were talking about coming up to the top of the hour with Clemson and Ole Miss, where Clemson had signed a player who's already enrolled in taking classes, transferred in from Cal, and then Pete Golding texts the young man and asks, what'll it take to buy you out? And now he's at Ole Miss.
Here's what I'm going to say when it comes to the NCAA. People have railed and pitched their fit and held their noses and stomped their feet and everything else at the NCAA. Where is any school president out there right now sticking his neck out and doing his job?
Well, you mean and trying to every
school in the NCAA is a voluntary member of the NCAA.
That's right.
And it takes every school president as members of the NCAA to say, these are the rules we're going to play by. This is what we're going to go by.
Yeah, that's
right. And where are the school presidents saying, no, this is the organization that which we all agreed we are going to be a part of, and these are the rules that we're going to play by?
What you're having
they don't exist. Yeah. You used to have the little bow tie guy up at Ohio State that kind of did this. I don't remember his name.
Well, no, the NCAA doesn't. Yeah, well, oh, G Gordon Gee, whatever is, you know, the Gordon Gee.
GEE.
Yeah, but I mean, and you have had statements. You have had statements from Baker, and you had one from the vice president of basketball for the NCAA or whatever. But like, I think they're waiting to see what happens in court on Tuesday with Bediako, because if you clear the way for him to play, like the NCAA can stomp and kick, but if a legal path is cleared for him to play. Now, I would also say that if Bediako plays tomorrow and then gets yanked off the floor by a judge on Tuesday, this whole thing will have looked ridiculous.
Yeah, but Jeremy's got a great point. If there were some university presidents saying, "No, wait a minute. No, this isn't the way.
Right.
This isn't what we agreed upon." No. Then
President Roberts and whoever the other presidents at Knoxville, and like Florida's coach is clearly against this. We've heard what he said. He needs to have his president out there getting other presidents to come out with a statement and say, Alabama, you are wrong. We are all part of this organization together, and you're wrong. That's the only way you're going to stop it, because you can always find some judge that went to school where went to your school at some point in time and will give you an injunction, because, like I said, we're stopping at just about everything short of child sacrifice now. That's really where we are.
Oh, if the ruling of a local judge can override the NCAA saying a player is ineligible, you don't have a system. Like, you don't have a system anymore in that case, which is why I think the next step of the Bediako case is crucial. But look, this thing's crumbling. From like on field, college basketball, college football, women's college basketball, like the product is solid. It's fun to watch. But as far as following it year to year and questioning like the rules of how rosters are made up, like this thing, it makes less sense by the day. And the Bediako thing could finish it off, because it would open the door to a lot of players making the argument that they should also be eligible in college athletics.
Indefinitely, too. Like, that's really where you're going. Because, like, if they can't say, you know, whether you've done it this this, why is there any eligibility requirement? Like, right. why do we have freshmen, seniors, sophomores? Like,
exactly right.
You know, if LeBron's still good enough at 40, let him suit up at USC and just keep playing.
And Mark Pope said Wednesday, and I know he's not the only prominent person to say, like, you know, this thing should be reflected. Like, Alabama's NCAA tournament resume should include the asterisk that they're playing someone that the NCAA said was ineligible, and they're playing them sort of against NCAA wishes. I don't know if we're going to see the tournament committee act like a referee in this situation, but I wonder.
It is their tournament, though.
But I wonder if
NCAA's tournament.
I wonder if part of the reason why you're not hearing the outcry from presidents and conference commissioners is they don't want to look like hypocrites if Bediako wins in court,
and their school wants to get somebody like that back.
I will say this is going to be the last thing, and I'm gone. The AHSAA.
Mm-hmm.
This is where I will give them credit because they have stood up to the state of Alabama. When it comes to some of these things, the AHSAA has basically said, we are a voluntary private institution. Like, if anybody doesn't want to be a part of our organization, they are free to leave at any point in time. And that's the part that I've never heard anybody stand up and say. Like, there is some charter somewhere that said, when you signed up as a school to be a part of our organization, you agreed to play by these rules. And it's the one thing that I've never heard anybody say. The NFL can make rules about how they're eligible, what their standards are for play, who can be a part of it. I've never heard anybody make that argument for the NCAA. And it just baffles me that you never hear anybody say that.
That's right.
Like, you are voluntarily a member of this. If you don't like it, there's tons of other places to go play basketball. You don't have to come to a college that is part of the NCAA. But if you're going to come here, these are the rules we're going to play by.
Well, that's strikingly similar to, I mean, earlier today at the top of the show, we mentioned that the senior vice president of basketball, Dan Gavitt, made a statement and had a statement in anticipation of, is following a call Friday with the National Association of Basketball Coaches. This was the statement regarding pre- and post-NBA draft eligibility. And that statement ends with, the NCAA membership has a set of rules in place regarding pre- and post-NBA draft eligibility that have been clearly in place and supported by all parties until these recent court changes, or court challenges, unquote.
Right.
So they're saying that, like, yes, these rules, as Bill was just mentioning,
they're still NCAA rules. The problem is courts have said, nah, you don't have to go by that.
And I think they recognize how significant losing the Bediako case would be, mm-hmm. as far as their ability to decide who is and who isn't eligible.
All right, guys.
Appreciate the call, Jeremy. Great thing. Great call there to get things started here in hour number two.
And I don't know what that means as far as roster building and who you'd suddenly be allowed to add to your team in any sport.
334-321-1390. Let's get another call before we get to our first break. Not sure who we have. Hey, who are we talking to?
It's Pat.
Hey, bud.
Hey, Pat.
Hey, guys. Yeah, obviously what Jeremy's saying is there is no contract, or else the NCAA would have shown the contract to the judge, and there would have been exactly what he said. So all that's just the point, is it was never set up that way like the NFL. Or like the NBA. And so if you don't have your own little organization that has everybody signed into, and everybody, the coaches, the presidents, the players, every single person signed the contract saying that they knew what they were getting when they came in, then you wouldn't have this problem. We don't have that system.
That's why they're
losing.
If
an NFL player complained to a judge, they would lose.
They would, because the NFL has that, and the teams are part of the NFL. I don't think that's the case, Pat. I had to when I was in the athletic department. And Don, you've had to do this.
Yeah.
The wording of the NCAA manual is that schools are voluntary members, and they agree to this, and
right.
they have agreed to this for 100-plus years.
Yeah.
It is just, this is a situation now where players are challenging this because they're not employees.
Yeah.
The difference is in the NFL, in the NBA, and Major League Baseball, they are employees of those teams. And the NCAA, the biggest problem for the NCAA has been and now is, there's no question, the fact that they so firmly wanted to be on the side of saying they were, you know, amateurs, and therefore these players are not employees, and that gives the players the right to go in and challenge these rules. It's not that the schools haven't agreed. It's the schools, as Jeremy was saying, I think a lot of the schools feel like, well, the NCAA is going to have to do something about this, and then the NCAA is saying Congress has got to do something about this. Meanwhile, the players are winning in court.
Yeah, but see, if the NCAA says Congress has to do something about this, that means they don't have a winning, they don't have a sealed agreement like
they have
like
agreements with the schools, but that doesn't trickle down to the players.
And here's that's the thing, right, okay, important to think about, Pat. Just because two parties have an agreement doesn't mean, especially if you're talking about the conferences and schools or whatever you would use to make up the NCAA, it's like that doesn't mean that a player can't challenge that agreement's legality in court and win, right? Like it's and that's the lack of collective bargaining, the lack of a seat at the table for someone looking out for the best interest of student athletes is, I think, ultimately what you're saying. You know, like that's ultimately what's missing from a lot of these agreements that would allow them to pass the smell test in court.
Yeah, well, see, I mean, Jeremy says, you know, this president needs to stand up, and that sounds great, but who's going to do that? I mean, Texas is not going to do that. They want to buy Archie Manning for $8 million. They want to buy Cam Coleman for $4 million. I mean, this working out great for them. I mean, the Oregons, the Texas Techs, the Texas A&Ms, the Miamis, Miami ain't going to agree to go, okay, what are you going to really do? Do you think that any of these teams are going to agree? Let's say we created a system right now, and we're going to say, okay, we're only going to spend $30 million a year on players. Okay, and then everyone's got to do this, and you got to sign a 2-year contract, and you got to do this and that. Do you really think that everyone is going to agree to that? I don't think anybody.
Pat, do you think everyone followed the rules before we made NIL like a thing legally?
That's right. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying they're not going to give up their power. They have the power. Miami has the power. They can buy. Alabama can do whatever they want. They're doing whatever they want. And there's no way that they're playing Betty Yako without knowing that the NCAA could go back and take those games away. There's no way. They can't take the games away. The NCAA cannot take the games away because it's legally been ruled that he can play by a judge.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's not even that he's been ruled to play. It's been ruled that they can't not let him play.
Oh no. Yeah. I do wonder though if the NCAA could say, all right, he's playing, but we're not going to count those games when we get ready to determine our postseason. We're not going to count those victories that he played in.
If Betty Yako kept winning in court, I think it would be tough for the NCAA to do that. Now, if Betty Yako, I think you would have a pickle on your hands here, Pat. If Alabama played Betty Yako tomorrow, and then on Tuesday the Betty Yako side lost in court, and the NCAA's 5-year window or ability to maintain, but how often is the NCAA? It's the Harlem Globetrotters. How often is the NCAA winning in these court? Like when the NCAA
needs to find a friendly local judge.
When they get in, when they get in front of they get in a court of law and have to defend the legality of their rules, it feels like they lose nonstop. Like they lose,
that's right.
Nonstop.
Well, and they are going to lose because how can you say that a European guy can come back because he's over in Europe, you know, but if the G League's okay, you know, because, well, that's just the G League. But if it starts with an N, like an NBA or the NFL, well, then that's a rule. That there's no rule. That's an arbitrary and capriciously made up rule.
It is, but the thing is, those professional leagues have really helped those rules be enforced because that's what they want too. I don't think the NBA wants players to be able to sign with them and then decide they're going to go back to college either.
Well, I mean, all they do is send them down to the G League. So what do they really care? if they're not good enough.
Well, they don't have control of them when they go back. If they go back to college, Charles Bediako is not still property of anybody and any team that did that, unless the next step would then be, all right, your farm teams. You're just going to have, you know, that this whole school, their players would be then the property of a certain team.
And that's what folks thought for a long time. It's like, well, part of the appeal of college football and college basketball is that NBA and NFL teams don't want to operate farm systems for 18-year-olds the way that you have professional baseball in other parts of the world or soccer in other parts of the world. They'll start building their rosters with 13-year-olds and 14-year-olds and develop them through the process of becoming professional athletes. In America, it's a little bit different where it's like, all right, well, you have this college football and college basketball system in place. The ability for players to jump back and forth or whatever would happen with a Bediako victory on Tuesday, like, Patton, you've been explaining it for a while that you think some of these players could challenge the eligibility rules and have some success. Like, the floodgate of players that you could have potentially returning to college football and college basketball, and I guess college baseball. Like the players that could that would seemingly have the option to return if Bediako wins on Tuesday. It's tough to wrap your head around.
But nobody's going to do that. I mean, the NBA, why do they care? I mean, whether they're in the G League making $29,000 a year or whether they're in Auburn making, $250,000 a year, why do they care? If they're good enough to go back to the NBA, the NBA will offer them a $5 million contract and they'll go back to the NBA. I mean, nobody's going to stay in college if they can play in the NBA. So I don't think the NBA I don't think any of those, they don't care. What's going to kill is going to kill the G League. And it's going to kill all the minor league things.
It's going to kill minor leagues, and it's going to hurt the crap out of high school. It is going to hurt.
But it's going to help college.
The thing is, eventually, if you don't have as much talent being developed and playing in high school, you're going to end up with a bunch of 40-year-old guys playing, and it's going to be a senior league.
Well, I mean, look, right now, why does everybody care so much about a 17-year-old kid in high school? I would rather – I'm worried about winning in Auburn. So whether some guy doesn't get a chance to go to college, he'll get to go to college. He'll have to go to Boston College or have to go to Chattanooga. And then he'll play for a year and he'll show that he's really good. And then somebody in Auburn or Alabama will pick him up and then he'll be good. And then he'll be good enough to go to the NFL and then he'll go to the NFL. I mean, nothing is changing. It's just these rules have been, you can only transfer between 12 o'clock on this time to 10 days. Could you imagine if you had a job and they told you that you can only transfer, you can only change jobs at these 15 days a year at this point. And if you don't do it by this day, well, you're stuck. You got to stay there, and you can't, nobody can call you. If anybody text messages you, you can't take any other talk to anybody else. You have to work at this one company forever.
Well, you are explaining though. Hold on, Pat. In professional leagues, there are these setups, right?
That's
like
right.
You have windows.
Every single sport at the supposedly highest level, yeah, there are absolutely these rules.
But they signed up for it. When you sign to go to the NFL, you are signing, I am going to the NFL. When I go, I'm going to follow their exact rules, and that's what I'm going to do. Or else you don't go into the NFL. That they don't let you go in. That's what the difference is that nobody signed to do all this stuff. Jeremy says they did, but
what do players agree to do when they sign? Do they not agree to abide by whatever
the rules academically, all those things? And remember, we had every year I had to sign a paper agreeing to do everything by the NCAA rules and the test, like we talked about yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's.
But if the rules aren't legal,
yeah, I never had to worry about that. So
that's a great point. Is that if you sue in court and win to prove the rules aren't legal, there's sort of a vacuum of like what is and what is not, and that's where, again, and we appreciate the phone call, Pat. We got to take a break, but the Bediako thing, like, is. It feels existential next week. It feels like if he wins, like, what power does the NCAA have to
none,
to tell?
None. I mean, if these things that are going on this week, if things like happening with the guys in the transfer portal and with Charles Betty with the Bediako situation, it's like, sure, players can just do whatever they want and play as long as they want, wherever they want.
Yeah.
Just
we have more gentlemen's agreements than rules, right?
It's sort there of were the, rules. The thing is, you have such strong professional leagues right now that I feel like if players in the NFL, if enough players in the NFL, in Major League Baseball, the NBA, went to court, went to those same courts, they'd win too. And then you just have free agency in every sport, in every league, although, in every sport.
Although
every
year. You would have pre-existing collective bargaining agreements in those sports, which would be sort of like what the ownership.
When there are agreements and every time those agreements are coming up for renewal, there are big concerns. There's never been a complete. All right, that's it. We don't want it anymore. We all want to be able to go on our own and be free agents every year. I mean, that's not inconceivable if this continues. Now, I know some people could give a crap about the professional levels. Like Pat said, I mean, it's like just want to win my team to win right now. Then, of course, you get the comments that Cody Campbell made this past week from Texas Tech saying, look, Alabama and Auburn, you're not the big guys anymore. We are. There's a new order of power teams, and it's the ones that have the most money. And sorry, SEC, you don't have it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be. I think the idea of it bleeding up to the professional sports feels because they have.
Oh, it's
these,
very.
Because,
it's
because
unlikely.
They have these structures. And what I'm wondering is how much of the professional sports structure do they want to bring to college athletics if they want to?
They haven't wanted to, but the problem is they're 20 years or so late in just doing it simply, and it would have been all taken care of. All right, we need to get to our first break here. Wow, we're behind. I'd love for you to join us here on the Friday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Winter is in full swing.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. 22 minutes away from 6 o'clock. And let's get back to the Drive hotline. And Spectre is up next. Hey, Spectre.
Hey, bud.
You got the right name, Hotline. Listen, let me ask you something. This guy that's playing basketball for Alabama, did he or did he not sign a pro contract and try to get back into college?
That's exactly what he did.
Yeah, he signed three NBA contracts.
To be clear, Spector, Charles Bediako, he did agree that to forego his college eligibility, the rest of it, to go into the draft. And he signed a couple of two-way deals with the NBA's G League minor league system and NBA teams. Never appeared in an NBA game, but has now decided to return to college basketball and finish his career as a fifth-year senior, despite having done all of those things.
Well, I tell you what, you know what's wrong with this world today?
A lot.
Everybody that's in charge that could do the right thing, and this guy should not even be playing basketball for Alabama. Mm. Well, they're not doing the right thing because they are scared.
Yeah.
These players everywhere have got us by the gonads because nobody wants to be called a racist, a homophobe, or anything else. That's the bottom line. Why isn't this guy not playing for Alabama? Why? He signed a contract. I don't care if he didn't even walk in the locker room. He signed a contract. He should be out on his butt.
Well, I think it starts here. I mean, why would a coach play him, right? Because they think he can help, right? And then
sure.
who should be the adult in the room saying, well, the rules say you can't, or this you know policy is in place to say you can't.
Well, you got it right. Nope. Everybody's thinking, but nobody wants to say it.
Oh, yeah.
This guy has got the authority to set him down, fire him, get rid of him, whatever. But he won't do it because he don't want to be called you know what.
And what's going to happen Tuesday, we'll see, because Bediako's going to have his day in court. Like right now, this is a temporary restraining order, and so he's allowed to play Saturday without a judge having necessarily heard all the arguments in the case.
Let me say one other thing. You know, it's not just this guy here. This is just a twig on the tree. I mean, look at what's happening in the girls' sports. What happened to Title IX? Title IX doesn't mean anything anymore. Look at what's happening to the portal. When the portal started, you got one transfer. Now you can transfer as many times as you want.
Yeah.
Look at NIL. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's all crazy.
We were just during the commercial break, Spector, we were talking about how I think especially in the case of college football and men's college basketball, they were resistant to a really structured system for a long time because it would beg the question, well, aren't these players employees? Aren't these players, like, with these structured rules in place and with the players receiving compensation in the form of scholarships and who knows what else, it's like, aren't these players employees? And so the NCAA tried to keep it arm's length. No, they're not employees. We're just the system that administers the championship. We don't do that. And keeping that distance has weakened every case they try to make in court when folks ask about the system.
You know, I have no problem with the players getting a piece of the pie. That's not a problem.
No.
I have a problem when they start eating the whole pie.
Or when there are no rules in place at all about how much pie is being offered.
Yeah, how big is the pie?
I'll say this. The people in charge, the people that make decisions, need to grow some acorns and do the right thing. That's all I got to say, guys.
Appreciate it, Spector. It's hard to imagine Bediako losing this, at least right now, if it's going to be in the same venue. And if he wins, why would anyone who has the eligibility time left, and no matter where they are, what level they are, if they feel like they're better off in college? Look, I understand why Charles Bediako wants to do this because he can it's probably more fun just hanging around Tuscaloosa than traveling wherever in the G League. And he'd be making – and I guarantee you he'll be making more money for the rest of this year than he was going to make in the G League. So I understand that. But, I mean, this really has the capability, the potential of opening the door for anyone who has moved on – foregoing, you know, what in the past would have meant foregoing the rest of your eligibility in any sport to be able to return.
Yeah, no, there's no telling what doors could be opened by this Bediako thing. As for Spector's point at the end there, like, I think that, you know, while it's easy to say you guys in charge need to do the right thing, and I think that that's probably true, but there might be different opinions about what the right thing is.
Yeah, and it may be beyond their capability of doing what you feel like is the right thing.
But I think they probably and it's easier said than done. But when Nick Saban and Bruce Pearl and John Calipari and Jay Billis and like multiple significant figures in this sport are saying it's got to be collective bargaining, you got to come to the table, you got to find a way to make this thing work. As employer-employee.
Yeah, but who doesn't want that? The players right now. Yeah. Players want no part of collective bargaining. They're getting what they want.
Well, you've had players try to – I mean, if you want to move this to an employer-employee thing, I think you can do that with – you'd need some agreement from the players, but I think you could find a way to – like, that's something they could do administratively if they wanted to. They could do that for a long time if they wanted to say that you need to be a university employee to do these sorts of things. That's feeling like a solution that makes this more of a clear-cut employer-employee relationship.
It's
going to be – if you want a structure, that's the structure.
Oh, I know. But I'm wondering if it's maybe beyond – if it has now gotten to the point where it's going to be hard to get back to that because there will immediately be a lawsuit saying, wait a minute, I don't want to be an employee. I haven't been an employee. I've been making all this money. Why should I be now? So, I mean, I don't see any reason why there won't be more and more legal actions. All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Isn't it? Yeah, okay. Still got time for you to join us here on the Friday Drive.
Auburn IT delivers professional IT support to businesses across Alabama.
U.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment of the drive here on this Friday. All right, We talked about it a couple of times. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to sort of run down the Auburn roster as it now stands, just giving you the players that are at each position, because this was a roster that it was pretty depleted when I think Auburn had 36, 37 players enter. They've already signed 38. But right now, you look at the roster, and there are 5 quarterbacks, 4 transfers, 2 from South Florida, and Byron Brown and Lachlan Hewitt, Tristan Tia, and then the signee who had been committed to South Florida in Reese Brush. So there are your 4 quarterbacks, 6 running backs, Jeremiah Cobb, the returner, transfers in Bryson Washington, Tay Meadows, Nakai Davenport, and then returnees, the youngster returnees, Omar Mabson and Alvin Henderson. So 6 running backs, 12 wide receivers, led by the transfers from South Florida in Chaz Nimrod, Keyshawn Singleton, Christian Neptune, Corey Pettigrew, Jeremiah Coger. So you have 5 transfers from South Florida, returnees in Bryce Kane, Sam Turner, Duke, and Eric Smith, and then 1 other transfer in Brian Williams, and the freshman, the incoming freshman, Deshaun Spencer, and Brady Marchese, who had signed was it Notre Dame? Trying to remember.
Michigan.
Michigan, that's right. Yeah, he was a Michigan signee, 1 of 2 Michigan signees.
Scrap's a Notre Damer.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Scrap had been a receiver, but he's now a DB. So 12 receivers. We now have 7 tight ends. I was wrong a while ago. I said 6. But Jake Johnson is a senior transfer. Auburn added 2 more transfers over the last 24 hours in Hunter Herring and give me the name of the HBO agent.
Ari?
Arliss.
Okay, Arliss.
Arliss, yeah.
Ari was the other one.
Arliss. Yeah, there we go.
There are 2 HBO, 2 famous HBO agents.
I had to think of that one. Because I haven't added him, but
Robert,
I mean,
he Robert Wool, of course, played Arliss.
That's true.
Agent of the Stars.
But Jonathan Echols and Xavier Newsom are 2 youngsters, transfers that have 3 years of eligibility. DJ Broughton is a freshman signing, and then Ryan Gee, the only returning. At tackle, I've got Auburn with 7 or 8 tackles, because Stanton Ramil, the transfer, Jacob Strand, a transfer, Joe Simmons, a transfer, are all tackles. Jack Lehrer could play tackle or guard, but then you have returnees in Wilson Zier, and who is an incoming – well, he's not a returnee. He's an incoming freshman. Returnee in
big fella.
Ty Buster, and then T.J. Hedrick is a redshirt freshman transferred in. So 7 or 8 guys at tackle. The same number. I've got 8 guards with Lara. I had pegged more as a guard, but Derek Plaz, who just committed over the last couple of days. Jacoby Ward, Kenneth McManus is another transfer. Cole Skinner is a senior transfer from South Florida. And then you have freshmen in Bear McWhorter, Michael Lundy Foster, Mason Mathis, and Parker Pritchett. So all of a sudden, you're 3 or 4 deep at all the spots. And then a couple of centers. You might have a 3rd center. I mean, I was wondering if McManus might get a look at center, but Cole Best is the South Florida transfer, and then Cale Ellis, the returnee. So around 48 or so players on offense. Defensively, I still think Auburn would like to add an edge and an interior lineman. At edge and defensive end, you've got transfers Deshaun Womack, Nate Johnson, and then returnees in Jared Smith, J.J. Falk, Joe Phillips, and then incoming freshman Jaquez Wilkes and Chris Wells. You know, so I'm not sure who's going to end up at edge, who's going to be the defensive end. And then inside, Auburn with at least 8 interior linemen, transfers in Cody Sigler, who's got 1 year of eligibility, and then Walter Mathis, Buddy Mathis from Ole Miss, had been at LSU before that. St. Farrier is a transfer who has a couple of years of eligibility. And then the returnees in Jordan Crawford, Malik Autry, and incoming Darian Smith, and then the incoming freshman in Tavian Branch and Corey Wells. So you've got eight guys there, Don. They'd still like to add another one.
Yeah,
you know, probably another guy with you know, some experience.
Right, I agree with you. They need to get at least one, probably two more.
Auburn added a seventh linebacker today, and Michael Matthews Canty to go along with. Let's say, I believe he is the only transfer, because the rest of the linebackers are all returning. Auburn with a very strong returning core of linebackers, Elijah Melendez and DeMarcus Riddick, of course, Xavier Atkins, the primary guy. He is the number one guy, Juice Diaz, and then Shadarius Tootle coming in along with Adam Balugan Ali. So they've got seven linebackers, and then boy, they had to completely redo the cornerback situation after losing their two starters and another player who played a good bit. Looks like the starters right now would be transfer Andre Jordan from UCLA and returnee Rayshon Pleasant. You've got Shamar Arnaud, who was at LSU, who has transferred in. Gavin Jenkins, a transfer from South Florida. And then you've got Scrap Richardson, we were talking about, was a receiver who redshirted at Notre Dame, but is being looked at as a corner. Blake Woodby is a returnee. Devin Williams, a returnee. I believe that's all the guys. Kamari Todd was another guy that is coming in and could be a corner. The nickels and safeties, I've got 12 of those, with Champ Anthony, Sylvester Smith, New Boy Fagans, Eric Winters as your and Caleb Harris as your proven returnees, along with transfers and Jack Luttrell. DeMonte Tabb is a freshman, but Fred Gaskin's a transfer. Then Paul Thompson, Shadrick Tootle, Wayne Henry, I think round out there. So 94 players. I didn't even get into the specialists, but Auburn hasn't added any specialists except for a snapper. But 94 players, I think an amazing job by Alex Golish and staff, and I don't think they're done.
No, not at all. I think they've got a couple more spots, and they, like you said, they need to get some D linemen.
Yep. All right, we'll see what happens over the weekend. Big game for Auburn tomorrow, the Tigers and Gators tomorrow afternoon. You can hear it on Wings 94.3, 2:30 the pregame, 3 o'clock the tip. Don, have a great weekend.
You too. Thank
Dan,
you,
Dan, I
guys.
Guess I'll see you Monday, right? And then you're out?
That sounds good.
All right, that's going to do it for the Friday Drive. Have a great weekend, everybody. We are out of here.
Hey, everybody, this is Jacob Gawd.